Hey, thanks.
Thanks.
The other thing about that trip that was just so extraordinary is that the car had a rumble seat and I got to ride in it.
It was just part of the way you lived. You didn't think about it. That's what we did.
You know, that wind, you know, just taking your face off.
I was really clear. This was it. This was home. There is no, you can't go home again. That's really true.
You could say they're running away from things. I think they're running to things.
This is home. You know, this is who I am. I'm an American, whether I like it or not. This is who I am.
I think they're running to things. Two things.
Welcome to Hitchhiking Off the Map. I'm Conrad Bishop.
I'm Elizabeth Fuller.
And we're broadcasting from under our redwood tree in Sebastopol, California.
That's a lie. We're in a funny little studio in our garage.
But there is it's out there. It's up there. The Monterey Pine,
and
the palm tree, the whole thing. We'll
right.
go out and we'll see it in a minute, all right? And this is our very first show of the series. Congratulations.
We made it.
We are making it. And the show is about, what, travel, trips, journeys?
It's the stuff that happens as a result of the trip. You know, it's the way you just don't plan come back the same.
Or you don't come back. You go off to camp or college, and the you that comes back is a little bit different.
Or it's stories we get from you. We'll be here every week, and if you miss one, you can visit our website.
www.independenteye.org. We will repeat that a number of times. Send us a story. What formed you into whoever you think you are?
And what we'll have coming up in the oncoming weeks, let's see, a first time of going to jail.
Breaking one's neck, trip to China, the very strange trip that someone made to the corner grocery. Those will be here in the weeks coming up. We have lots of strange friends. And that can include you.
And Steve.
Steve.
Our friend Steve. We caught up with him in western New York State on a camping trip. He's an actor, and to make a living, he does stuff with computers and graphics. But for the first 14 years of his life, he was growing up in the remote mountain areas of the Philippines. So we asked him, what was that like?
It was splendid. It was absolutely splendid. I was always very aware of being a special child in a special family because the sort of status that is accorded to white folk in general and missionaries in particular. We were in many instances the first white folk that had come down the road. Not only was my father bringing the good news of salvation, but there's a certain aura to being an American in a third world country. My mother was 6 months pregnant with me when she went to the Philippines the first time. And she was a young woman who already had three children under the age of five at that point and was leaving Iowa for the first time in her life to go off to this mysterious place halfway around the world to save souls for Christ. And a remarkable woman of huge strength. All of the other transitions we did were by boat, usually by freighter. And it was about a two-week journey each time, coming and going. So there was a sense that's hard to recreate now of vast distance between the two places. The last time we came back to the States, because of health considerations, it was insisted that we fly. So we flew into Tokyo and then Honolulu and then over to San Francisco. And it just seemed miraculous that within 3 days you could go from that world to this world. And now I talk to people and it's just, oh, I've got this 12-hour flight and I'm not looking forward to it. And I think, how the world has shrunk. How the world has shrunk. We were given the sense from the very beginning that we were there as a family with a purpose. And my father firmly and wholeheartedly believed he had been called by God to spread the good news of salvation to the poor heathen before they died and spent eternity writhing in everlasting fire. And because this was true belief, not just some mental exercise. There was a very strong urgency to the mission, to what we were there for. We would load up this big top tent into and on top of this GMC carryall that we drove around in, and struggle up the mountains across these incredible, tiny, washed-out gravel roads that may or may not be there on any given day. And we would enlist whatever local help wanted to help, and there was always a lot, because this, you know, this is vastly entertaining. And erect this big tent and put the generator in place. It was a huge adventure as a child to be part of this, to be going in on this, into this new area and meet the tribal people. We were just treated with such amazing love and respect, regardless of whatever the antagonism may be toward this new religion that the white man was bringing. And there was vast, vast reluctance on the part of both the pagan elders in the mountains and the Roman Catholic hierarchy in the lowlands against this this Baptist stuff. But that never affected the unending warmth and hospitality that just radiates from these people like air. We would make great friends with whoever the kids were in whatever area we were in. And we just played. We ran amok. And I never really gave any thought to the fact that we were white kids and they were brown kids. Although frequently when we first would get to a new place, our white skin would be a subject of great curiosity. So you'd be bathing in the river or showering in whatever makeshift setup was available, and there would be, you know, hundreds of pairs of eyes peering in to see if you were really white all over. Are they white everywhere? And being the only white kids in within, you know, maybe 100-mile radius up in the mountains never struck me as anything but the way the world was meant to be. When we came back in the late 60s, we spent our first year back in Des Moines, Iowa, and it was a year of some very, very intense race rides, not just in Des Moines, but across the country. I had a new Huffy bike that I'd saved up and mowed lawns and bought, and I was pedaling it across town to my uncle's house. I must have been about halfway there, and I suddenly heard some kids shouting at me, and I looked up, and here was a large gang of black kids of various ages, and they were really unhappy to see me there. And I carried my poor mangled bike home and bleeding from the nose and scraped arms and elbows. And I think that was the day I first truly arrived in what I've come to understand America to be. It's hard to conceive of who I would be if I'd grown up differently. I have a vast appreciation for what America is, and a bottomless cynicism about what America is. I think it's informed very strongly by my having grown up elsewhere, and having shared that former worldview of America as the shining city on the hill, and then coming back and being plunged into it just in time for a front row seat as we burned down the cities and beat each other over the head. But you know, I was given a huge, huge gift in that the world, it was round to me from the time I was born. I knew both sides of the globe, and I grew up Filipino. And when I think of eating warm balut from a street vendor, or sitting down at one of the many, many, many feasts that we would be invited to each year up in the mountains where carabao were slaughtered in honor of the visitors, and drifting to sleep each night with the sound of the drums and the gongs wafting down the hillside. The amazing beauty of the South China Sea roiling in onto pure white sand beaches. And this was all just my playground. This was where I got to be. went from a very, very small school environment to this massive structure of a year of junior high and then into a high school with 2,000 kids and just this beehive that was pressing in on all sides. And they were all speaking this language. It literally took me a year and a half to 2 years to begin to become fluent in. You know, the slang just was totally new to me. In the Philippines, the way I was being raised and the way the people I knew were raised there, education was something that was bestowed on you by the elders in order to prepare you to take your place within the tribe or within the village or within the system of the town. You never lost sight of the fact that the people you needed to model yourself after were the elders and the chiefs and the artisans and the hunters. And from a very early age on, I learned to spot these men and watch them. And that became probably the truest part of my education as a young child. And then we came back here, and there was none of that. You just took 2,000 teenagers and sort of wadded them together and moved them from room to room throughout the day and threw facts and figures at them. And the people that these kids were choosing to model themselves after weren't the elders and the hunters, the warriors, the chieftains. It was each other. It was whoever of the kids was the alpha. And then everyone else would either model after that or do the opposite, model away from it. But you're still making your choices based on this half-formed other human being. And I look at that now again in respect to raising my son and how I want to do that, because to me, learning was a vast joy, and I hate to watch my glorious little boy get lockstepped into the hideous mistake that much of our public schooling is here in America now. The tribes people of Northern Luzon are an incredible race. They are people who lived the wheel. They lived the seasons around. In every bit deeply aware as they breathed and ate. These are people who taught me a lot about the strength of being women. There's a lot of logging happens up in those mountains. And I've watched commonly two very, very strong, strapping men pick up a massive log and grunt and groan under the strain of getting it up into the air, and then they would balance that log right on the crown of this woman's head. And the woman would just start up the mountain with it, balanced on her head, taking it one step at a time. And when she got to the top of that big, big mountain, two other very large, strong men would come and grab that log and get it back down on the ground. And the woman would turn around and walk down the mountain and take the next log up. It gave me an enduring sense of power, the power that is available to all of us if we're not told what we can't do. These are people of immense simplicity, and yet they took a mountainous terrain that nobody else wanted. And somewhere way back there in those millennia, one of them got the idea that you could in fact grow rice on the side of a mountain. All you had to do was carve the mountain up into terraces and figure out a way to move water. And generation after generation, over hundreds and then thousands of years, these mountains were slowly carved into terraces. And the thought that these people have lived in this place, in these tribes, for thousands of years, carrying on this masterwork of engineering, and they have done it in a way that allows life to flow through the tribe from before time was remembered, and I think they always thought onward for more time than they could foresee. So that the individual life they were living was just, you know, one more little bend in the river of this tribe's life as they carried out this incredible physical magic of transformation.
We were talking to Steve Willite,
who now makes his home with his wife Elle and his son Orlan in Washington, D.C. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map. We're moved to tell these stories, I guess, because we've been together for 40 years.
Actually, 41.
41, and that is a trip.
Oh, God, it's been a trip.
Yeah, we often don't even know who's driving, actually. And as performers, we've traveled about 500,000 miles in the last 30 years, often staying not in the usual hotel, motel, star accommodations by any means, but often on people's back rooms and floors and futons.
What that gives you is those late nights in the kitchen over a cup or a glass of something and swapping stories.
Yeah, well, 1 year we were in a millionaire's guest mansion, really.
Yes, poolside mansion, the day after we had been sleeping on the floor in a social worker's one-room house.
And so we've met quite a few people I think you'll enjoy knowing.
We'd like you to contribute a story of your own. An alternative to our kitchen is to visit our website at www.independenteye.org. You spell I-E-Y-E, and drop us an email.
So this next story comes out of a friend's true experience as a kid moving north from Florida. But as sometimes happens, we can't resist playing with it a little, because it bore a strange similarity to those dreams. You've had them where you're back in school.
Yeah, they're called nightmares.
Oh, yeah. This is Dakota. This was a dream I had. I was reading a story to my daughter about immigrants. She picked it out. And Anna looked out on the winter streets and felt at last she was home. The end. It gave me the creeps. I always hated people you were supposed to feel sorry for. They were just too damn tired and poor and huddled and massive. I tucked in my daughter. My wife was reading. I went to bed. When I was in third grade, we moved from Florida to South Dakota, November. My dad was in the Air Force. We'd always lived in the South. I came into this classroom. It was like they were. Teacher said, right, "What are the chief exports of Paraguay?"
Pumpkin.
A pair of sneakers.
Wheat.
Beef.
Carrots.
Linen.
Soybeans.
Sombreros.
Cocaine.
They didn't say that. I got introduced somehow.
Yes, we have a new student. This is Robbie.
Why has he got shorts on?
I had shorts on, and a short sleeve shirt and sandals. That's what I always wore. Everybody else was bundled up. Not only was I the new kid, I was from another planet.
Look at his feet.
Teacher asked about my
Children,
clothes.
Why do you suppose Robbie is dressed like this?
Because he's retarded.
Because he's got cancer?
Because he's from someplace else?
From Florida.
That's right. Robbie is from Florida.
Florida. Florida. Florida. Florida. Florida.
And where is Florida?
Down south.
Down south.
And they're talking about
down
my shorts
south,
and
that's
sandals.
Right. And what do we call his pants?
Shorts.
How about his shoes?
Sandals.
Duck feet.
Dog poop.
She asked me to sit up front, and I could be in
Robbie,
the front row.
Seat.
And I did not like that idea.
You can all see the back of your head.
Cooties.
That isn't me. I'm Robbie, and I'm married. I have two kids and a master's degree in business administration. Moving from Florida to South Dakota doesn't mean you're an immigrant.
Children, new places are scary. We want to make Robbie feel
she
good.
Said,
we don't want him to cry and pee the bed.
I don't.
We want to learn about his customs. Robbie, could you tell the class your customs?
Breakfast.
Children, questions?
And they ask me a bunch of questions.
What is Florida
questions,
like?
Questions, questions.
What language is that?
You want a knuckle sandwich?
Are you queer?
This is Shumaris. I think it's important that we treat people nice who are of other races or creeds, even if ours is the best.
Mrs. Shumaris, a blizzard is moving in, so we may have early dismissal.
They announced there was going to be a blizzard.
Robbie, a blizzard.
A blizzard is
I is your mother dressing you like this?
This is what we wear.
This is what they wear in Florida, children. But this is the United States. Why don't you have a warm jacket?
Mommy hasn't bought it.
Why not?
She's busy.
Too busy to dress you?
I've got a baby sister.
So she likes your baby sister better?
My mom loves me best.
Well then, why does your mother not like you, Robbie?
Because he dresses funny.
Some people can wake up from a dream.
Because he's a terrorist.
It's just a dream.
Are you a terrorist, Robbie?
It's just a dream.
He's grinning.
I'm not grinning. It's how my teeth go.
Way of life.
Is that true, Robbie? Do you like Florida better?
It's just a dream.
Let's take off his pants.
We have to kill him, Mrs. Shumaris, because he's highly filled with hatred.
Let's kill him and then take off his clothes and look.
Look, I'm not a child. I'm 42 years old.
It's not you, Robbie. It's what you represent.
A lot of people have these dreams where you're grown up, but you go to school and you wake up in a cold sweat. If you wake up...
Mrs. Shumaris, sorry to interrupt.
They announced that it was snowing, and I looked out the window, and it was snow. It was really snow.
Children, look!
What is it?
Snow!
I'd never seen snow.
Children, guess what? Robbie has never seen snow.
And then they got the idea of watching me seeing the snow.
Then we can write about it and draw pictures.
Or kill him.
I don't think we should kill people just because they're different. We should give them a chance to change.
Jenny, would you take Robbie outside so he can see the snow?
Yes.
We want to watch how Robbie likes it.
What if he doesn't?
Then can we kill him?
Only if you behave yourselves.
Maybe nightmares mean I'm unhappy. But no, I think it's telling me someplace I need to go. The travel itinerary. We go out to the schoolyard. I feel the snow on my face. It's not a dream. It's real.
Look at him. He's eating snowflakes.
Big mouth.
He looks like a puppy.
We went outside in my shorts and sandals in the snow.
That's the snow.
I know that.
They're looking out the window.
What for?
They want to see what you do.
He was a little squatty kid. Freckles looked like he'd been beat up a lot.
Hey, hold him.
Don't bang on the window, boys and girls. It makes them nervous.
Do something.
What?
Show how you like the snow.
I'm cold.
This is interesting, Mrs. Shumaris, because if you're out in the snow and you're not wearing the right clothing, you don't deserve to live.
I gotta go in if you're not gonna do something.
Denny, would you be my friend? Because it's lonely out here and I really don't know what to do. You seem really honest and down to earth, and so I thought maybe we could be friends.
No.
He goes away, I don't know, maybe to live in a trailer park and have cancer or something. I'm locked out, snow coming down, and by this time, of course, I'm totally naked. It always comes down to that. Kids are in the windows laughing, pointing at the little immigrant. And I do love America the way I'm supposed to, but I hate South Dakota. And then I'm just seeing a picture of kids at the window. It's a picture in a magazine of kids at a window, and I turn the page, and they're gone. Just turn the page.
You still awake?
Oh, hi. I just read Jesse a bedtime story about immigrants. I was thinking about being in South Dakota.
Right, you were in South Dakota.
In third grade, I was not happy there, but... I loved it. Does that make sense?
No, but that's permissible.
So bitter. But the snow, first time you see magic. We left, we were driving south to Omaha, and I looked out the back window. You could see the Black Hills and these big plaster dinosaurs in the park. Snow melting. I thought, now I've seen snow. I'm the little immigrant boy. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Or just keep breathing.
Yesterday was a little skiff of snow.
You know what it tastes like? Lemon.
Lemon drop stars.
It was a depressing dream, I guess. But I kept giggling about it. I guess the stepping out into the snow and all the stars and turning the page. And then I was 42. So very simple. The first time I rode the nightmare to where I wanted to go. reindeer. Joining us in Dakota were Elaine Holtz, Ken Norton, Jane McPherson, Connie Behrens, Randy Ellis, Dave Berry, and Demira. And that piece was developed with the assistance of our local Genesis Ensemble. Next week, JC and Bill, a poet and an ER physician, their trips separate and their trips together.
And the travel font for the week from Robert Louis Stevenson. For my part, I travel not to go anywhere, but to go. I travel for travel's sake. The great affair is to move.
And if you'd like, you can send us your own travel thoughts, whether personal or gleaned from quotations. You can send us travel dreams, travel ideas, travel hints and tips, as long as they are impractical. Hitchhiking Off the Map is a production of The Independent Eye. For CDs of our shows or to contribute stories, visit our website, once again, www.independenteye.org. And we'll send you information on the Hitchhikers Guild, which supports this show along with funds from the National Endowment for the Arts. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller.
And Elizabeth is also our composer and our engineer. And we'd like to offer the disclaimer that we do not encourage literal hitchhiking, no we do not, or leaving home without a map. Stay sane, just stretch it a little.
Actually, one of my earliest memories in life was standing outside of this small clapboard house in Des Moines, Iowa, bundled up in one of those old snowsuit things, so tightly that you can't move, and just standing out there in absolute awe of this cold white stuff that was falling out of the sky.